Hello and welcome to the call. I am Dotsy Briegel, founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be found at www.nabbw.com, and also BoomerWomenSpeak.com, which can be located at www.BOOMERWOMENSPEAK.com. And today I'd like to tell you a little about who I'm interviewing and where we're going to go with the interview. We are talking about making elder care decisions by choice and not by crisis. When it comes to helping aging parents, most baby boomers discover that finding the right answers and getting their aging loved ones to willingly do what is in their best interest are two very different things. So today we have Barbara Friesner, who is the founder of AgeWise Living, AgeWiseLiving.com, and the country's leading generational coach. She came up against this very frustrating fact time and again as she began what has turned into almost a 25-year journey as the caregiver, first for her grandmother and now for her mother, who has advanced dementia. Barbara has learned firsthand how overwhelming and stressful and time-consuming elder care can be. And I'm sure that those of you who are listening are probably pretty familiar, and that's why you're listening to this teleconference. She was unwilling to accept that knowing the right thing and doing the right thing had to be mutually exclusive. So Barbara combined her personal experience with extensive research, and she developed the concept of generational coaching. So as a generational coach, Barbara helps family members all over the country navigate through this challenging time and tries to help them avoid crashing into a wall of resistance that often leads to arguments, frustration, anger, and sometimes even worse. Working with one or more family members, this generational coach, Barbara, helps them develop and implement short-term goals to achieve the best long-term solution to their elder care issues. And then she coaches them on how to communicate effectively. Sometimes she'll even craft a script for the baby boomers on how they should talk very specifically to their parents so that their aging loved ones will willingly do what is in their best interest. And I mentioned parents, but sometimes it's not always our parents. Sometimes it's an old family friend or a neighbor or an aunt or an uncle. So just keep that in mind. And also, because siblings are often a major obstacle to resolving issues involving the mom and dad, Barbara also coaches her clients on how to gain sibling cooperation. And then in addition to one-on-one generational coaching, she also presents seminars for family members and professionals with senior clients on issues affecting seniors and their families so that the elder care decisions can be made by choice and not by crisis. So Barbara is really into planning ahead and staying on top of this whole issue of caring for our parents as baby boomers. She's an adjunct professor at Cornell University, where she created and taught Seniors Housing Management at Cornell School of Hotel Administration, and she's also a frequent speaker and lecturer. Of course, for more information, you can always go to her website, which we mentioned is agewiseliving.com, or you can even call her directly, toll-free, at 877-AGE-WISE. So hello, Barbara, and welcome to the call.
Good morning, Dotsy. Thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
Good. Okay. I'm really interested in giving the people who will be listening to this teleconference as much information as possible so they can plan ahead. And then sometimes if they haven't had an opportunity to plan, at least some information on what to do next. I know personally that caring for our aging parents can be a blessing and a curse, because I've lived through it with caring for my mom, who was diagnosed with cancer and given 6 months to live. And while it was very disheartening and everybody had to really jump and switch gears with our families, it was also a blessing because, by the grace of God, all of us really did get along and were cooperative. So I would hope that for other families too. I mean, I have to tell you, there were very stressful times, but for the most part, I think we managed it pretty well. And we did it by crisis and not by choice. But fortunately, my parents did have some things already set in motion. And in addition to that, my dad was still living, so that was helpful, too.
Very helpful.
Yeah. So anyway, how do we make decisions by choice and not crisis?
And it's something that, and I really want to start by saying that ideally, as you go through this process, so much of the time and so many of the books and so much of the energy and the focus is on the responsibility of caring for an aging loved one. And it is a responsibility, and it can be very difficult, and it can be very heartbreaking a lot of the time. But it is also, I'm glad that you mentioned that it's also something that, you know, you pull closer together, and it was something that was partly at least a good experience, because throughout all of it, that really should be the focus. You know, we get so tied into helping the aging loved one that sometimes, you know, we have to get them to doctor's appointments, and we have to get them into this, and we have to do that, that we forget to just have lunch with them sometimes. You know, where it's just because we want to spend time with them. So I really urge people to do that. But you asked about making decisions by choice and not by crisis. And the most important thing is to start early,
mm-hmm.
is to really start as early as possible today and start having conversations, not the conversation about the decision or anything like that, but just conversations. Opportunities to open the lines of communication and to build trust, and you know the kinds of conversations that you have with your girlfriends, and you know where you just talk about stuff, and to start having those conversations with your aging loved ones too, and letting them know so that they feel more and more comfortable to open up about difficult things, because for an aging loved one from a generation where you didn't talk about money and you didn't talk about health and you didn't talk about personal things, to start opening up and talking to you about it is going to take some time. So really starting early on gives you an opportunity to have a conversation and to open the lines of communication before there's a crisis.
Okay, and what are the kinds of things that we should, what are the conversations we should have? What are the topics of the conversations?
You mean if we're starting early on?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
General conversations about how the winter went and anything, you know, anything that they can think of that would have made it better, such as having help around the house, the neighborhood kid to shovel the driveway, for example. Something as simple and as innocent as that is a great answer is a great conversation to have. Because then you can start talking about now that spring is coming, is there additional help that they can help you with, the kids can help you with in the spring, planting bulbs and weeding and putting up the screens and things like that. The kinds of things that are going to enable them to realize, oh, yeah, it's good to have help in the home. It doesn't mean that I'm suddenly going to have a nurse show up every day. That, you know, it's that kind of conversation that leads into more opportunities.
Okay.
More conversations.
Sure. Okay. So what kinds of things should we research on our parents' behalf? And I would really like to get into the nitty-gritty, because like you mentioned, money, health, you know, there's things like wills, planning for funerals, you know, mom, what are we going to do if you or dad get sick? You know, those types of things. What should we be researching on their behalf and conversing with them about?
Well, there are several different kinds of issues. One is that you mentioned about wills and trusts and things like that, and to anticipate problems before they happen, you think about things that, you know, in your own life, you put in antifreeze in the winter into your car, or you prune the trees or whatever. So start thinking about the things that you would or should do for yourself, things like a living will or a healthcare proxy.
Okay, let me interrupt. What is a healthcare proxy? Do you want
to
be specific?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. A living will is a document that says what you want to have done when you are unable to speak for yourself. If you remember about the Terri Schiavo case, no one was able to. She had talked to people, but she had not written down and or done a living will as to what it was that she wanted if something happened to her. Does she want the feeding tubes, or doesn't she? That sort of thing. And that's all spelled out in this. It doesn't say you have to say yes or you have to say no. It just says this is what I want.
Okay. And is that the same as a health care proxy?
It's not. And let me also say that when we're talking about living wills and health care proxies, they're called different things in different states. So this is what they're called in New York State. But let me tell you about the health care proxy and then tell you where you can go to get them to download them for your individual state.
Okay.
A health care proxy is someone who speaks for you on your behalf for your health issues. So if I'm having surgery, this healthcare proxy, and they're in the middle of the surgery, and they say we can go either way. Someone needs to make a decision while we're still in there, while I'm under the anesthesia. So I have a healthcare proxy who can speak in my behalf.
Okay.
And that's what a healthcare proxy is. Now, we should all have them, not just our aging loved ones, but we should have them for ourselves. And if you go to Caring Connection, go to the website. The website is www.caringinfo.org. That's CARINGINFO.org.
Okay, great.
And you can download the Living Will and Healthcare Proxy, whatever they're called, for free.
Mm-hmm.
For every state. And so I urge you to do that for yourself, and I urge you to do it for your loved ones. And second of all, if you spend your summers in New York or you know, Connecticut and your winters in Florida, then you should download them for each state so that you have them, because the states can be a little bit funny about it. So just do it for both states while you're at it.
Ooh, good information. Okay, so we should do this research and try to get some of this stuff together. So a living will,
right.
Healthcare proxy,
will,
what else?
Powers of attorney, ambulance service, a good ambulance service, the phone number for an ambulance service in your area, so that if, God forbid, something should happen, you have the number right there. The nearest and or the best emergency room. Sometimes the nearest isn't the best, so find the nearest and the best emergency room.
Okay.
Looking into long-term care insurance. I don't sell insurance of any kind, but I tell you that one of the things that breaks my heart is when I see so many family members who struggle financially because they've had to pay money that they didn't expect to for their aging loved ones. And the long-term care insurance can really help them out on that. So that's something they definitely should be looking into and anticipating.
Okay.
I think having baseline tests done. I gave myself a concussion about a year ago, and the bad news is it hurt a lot. But the good news was that as a result of that, I went in and I had an EEG and a MRI and all kinds of pictures done on my brain. And I did as many as I possibly could, because that gives me a baseline for whatever comes next. And that's important to me because my mother has very advanced dementia. So for me, you know, it's always in the back of my mind whether I do. So I have now the baseline tests for my brain and for the rest of my body and all kinds of things. So you know, getting baseline, this is some of the things to anticipate. Emergency phone numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And the things like not just doctors and lawyers, but also the siblings and their office and school and whatever. One of the things that if you're interested as far as putting all the numbers together, like talking with your aging loved one about where their insurance is and where their safe deposit box is and where their, you know, who their lawyer is and all of that, if you go to my website, agewiseliving.com, and you can request a legal and financial organizer.
Ooh, okay.
So, yeah, so I will just send it out to you, which is just a it gives you one location. It lists everything that you would need to have. So if people are interested, please feel free to do that.
Okay, and you know, I just also at this point like to put in a plug for another member of the association, and her name is Joanne Hill, and she has written an elder organizer. It's called Elder Organizer, and it's a journal of information for family elders and their and the families, and it's this book that helps you get organized. You can actually write in the book, and it's a lot of this very same information that you're talking about, so that in the event of a crisis, everything is there. And even when it's not a crisis, you can still use it as a workbook. So anyway, I just thought I would mention that, and her name is Joanne Hill. Okay, so one other thing, if we could talk about it while we're thinking about research, because something that I know that happened to me recently was something happened with one of our loved ones, and we were really in a pinch thinking, oh, my gosh, they're going to need round-the-clock care immediately. So can you talk a little bit about that while we're talking about research and getting information in order? And then, you know, we'll talk more about, you know, how we can discuss all of this with our loved ones, because it's really not always easy to talk about. But what about the places that are available and the options that are available? Because our feeling was this loved one needed to either have someone 24 hours a day, which he was not in agreement with, or be in a facility around the clock, actually move out of his home, and he was not in agreement with that either. So it made things difficult. Fortunately, the crisis has resolved itself a little bit because of medication, and he's not as bad off as he once was, but that day is coming. And so how can we plan and know what the options are for our loved ones as far as, you know, staying home or going to a retirement community, a nursing home? Oh, gosh, heaven forbid. But anyway, can you help us a little with that?
Well, think in terms of, and this goes back to anticipating and planning ahead, where you look at the house. Mm-hmm. And you see, is it two levels? Are there a lot of stairs? Is it the kind of house that if there is any kind of mobility issue, they can't get around the house? Mm-hmm. So looking at it early on and thinking in terms of do they stay here, and if they do stay here, is there are there modifications that we can make that would make it possible for them to stay at home? And if it's not a crisis, then you don't have to start making those changes right now. But it is worth taking a look at and thinking about and saying, before we remodel the upstairs bathroom, maybe we ought to think about installing a downstairs bathroom, for example. You know, so thinking in terms, really early on, thinking in terms of looking at the house and how accessible is it to someone who may have mobility issues or may, you know, not be able to get around. Is it possible for someone to come and be there without being on top of my loved one all the time? You know, can they be in the house as someone to take care of them without having to be in the same room all of the time? Because oftentimes it's just that invasion of privacy, but if they had another room that they could go to, it might make it easier.
Sure, that's great. And that's something that you could, you know, say when somebody's like in their 70s or something, just decide to put in another bathroom on the first floor if they didn't have one. You know,
right.
Those types of things.
Right.
Okay.
And then there are also, you know, and having people to come in, but then also so that you can stay in your own home, but also possibly looking at a different apartment, a co-op or a condominium or something, where instead of living in the house, they can downsize and live in something that's smaller, but still living completely independently. There are also facilities called Continuing Care Retirement Communities, also known as CCRCs.
Mm-hmm.
And Continuing Care Retirement Communities, you start out, they're usually very beautiful and very luxurious, and you start out by buy into it. So you pay, it depends on the area of the country and whatever, but you pay, in essence, you purchase, you buy in, mm-hmm. and then you pay a monthly fee. Mm-hmm. And then your care is provided from the day you move in forever. And so you move in and you live independently in your own apartment, and then as you need more care is available eventually for assisted living and even nursing home. Mm-hmm. And this happens to be where my mother is, and we are just so lucky that the timing worked out perfectly, because we wouldn't be able to afford the $10,000 a month of a nursing home if she were not in, had not purchased into a CCRC 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's something, but there you have to plan in advance. Again, we're talking about planning in advance. That's something you have to think about early on, because you have to, in almost all cases, you have to be able to move into the independent housing in order to be accepted.
Right. So you can't wait until someone's very ill to get into that facility.
Right.
And I'd just like to mention a couple things about what you spoke about, just because I think it's important for us to share our story so helps other people think and recognize perhaps things that can happen in their situation. I was raised in a home with 5 children, and my parents lived in that home. And by the grace of God, they moved into an apartment. So they really downsized, and that happened 2 years before my mom was diagnosed with cancer. And we just look at it as a huge blessing, because it wasn't easy getting them out of that house. I mean, they wanted to move, but actually getting everything out, I mean, because all of us had so much in there, you know, in the attic and in closets, and that we just hadn't put in our homes yet. So it was a big ordeal. And then, of course, they had to decide, what furniture can we part with and what do we need to keep? And they really pared down at that point. So that was really helpful, because when mom became ill, they were on this one-floor apartment that had only 2 steps to get into it. They had a nice deck on the outside, which was really helpful, because she could still get outside easily. But and then another thing that I can relate to that you were talking about, and this is interesting and something I think people need to consider too. Now, what you were talking about is your mom is in this place. She paid an amount for does she have like a little condo, or how does that work?
Well, she would have had an apartment in a building,
mm-hmm.
As part of a main building. She would have had an apartment.
Okay.
And the place was being built, so she bought in, and then it was delayed in being finished for 2 years. And by the time she was, they were ready for her to move in, her dementia had already reached the part where she could not live independently. We were just incredibly lucky that as part of the agreement, they were eager to get people to sign up. So they said, no matter what condition you're in, when the time comes, we'll still take you. We were just lucky.
Right.
They would not have taken her otherwise.
Right. And one thing that I imagine you will talk about is finances. And the reason I bring that up is because my mother-in-law was in a retirement community. She actually bought her unit, which was like an apartment, in a building, and she could go down for meals. And so she basically bought her unit and then paid a monthly fee. But let me just tell you something. There were some things that we were not aware of. I guess we didn't totally read everything when she went in there. But when she became ill and she had to have medicine delivered 3 times a day to her little apartment, she had to pay for that. Every time somebody came, she had to pay for that medicine delivery. And then in addition to that, when she was once in the hospital and then went back into like their infirmary, she also had to pay more for that. So I think it's important that when our parents choose to go into these places, that we really help them read through everything and make sure we understand what will happen at each stage. You know, what if, okay, mom can live independently now, but what if she can't, while she's here? Because more than likely that happens, unless, they just die of a heart attack or a stroke or something sudden. And then what happens when mom needs to move into the full healthcare unit and is there, for months or years? And we need to make sure we know what all of the different fees are.
Yes, absolutely. And what is also important, you were talking earlier about doing research. One of the things that to think about is the facility will have usually a system of some sort that you buy into. You know, this plan versus this plan, this one delivers drugs, this one doesn't, whatever. And that's fine. But if your mom, it was your mother?
This was my mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law. If your mother-in-law only needed someone to bring her meds 3 times a day, and that's really all she needed, it's also something to think about as the family member, talking to other family members. And if there are other family members whose loved ones also only need that much care 3 times a day, then maybe you can all go in on, chip in on purchasing the services of someone, you know, a nurse's aide or something who does that, and that's all they do.
Yeah, that's a good thought because, you know, we could have, I didn't even think of it, co-opt with another family who was in the same situation, and between all of us, we could have taken a morning shift or, you know, I mean, I guess there are ways to get around it, but boy, when it's a crisis and you're in the middle of it, you don't have time to think of all those options.
Exactly.
And you just say, well, yeah.
And you're just glad that there's somebody there to do it because, you know, it's like I can't stop work, you know, 3 times a day.
Right.
And I completely understand it. And that's why I say, again, that, you know, don't wait for the crisis and to really think about it and to because when it's a crisis, then it's just all emotion.
Right. And that's very true. And you end up. In some ways, you know, you're just grateful for the services, but you end up wasting money. And I hate to think of parents' generation wasting money because, you know, it was something that,
yeah,
right, that they aren't in agreement with. They think that we waste more money than they would. And so they've been frugal because they lived through the Depression, et cetera. And so, you know, for me to witness that, it's heartbreaking because I know how heartbreaking it is for them. But they might not speak up because they know, oh, then this, if I don't pay for this service, then the kids are going to have to do it, you know. So
yes,
it's hard.
And they also oftentimes don't speak up because it's a generation that did not challenge authority.
Mm-hmm.
Especially doctors and nurses. They just didn't challenge them and still don't. And so sometimes it's a matter of, well, the doctor said to do this. Well, yeah, he said that it needed to be done. He didn't say you needed to do it or it needed to be done this way or it needed, you know, so sometimes it's a matter of getting in there and saying, I understand what you're saying, but let's see if it can be done so that they deliver the three deliveries at once, and you can take them 3 times a day. They don't have to, you know, they don't have to come and deliver it each time. So just it's just a matter of sort of stepping back a little and taking a look at the options and saying, is this our only option?
Right. Well, we've talked a little bit about, you know, you can move into a retirement community and they have the different levels of care. Of course, there's a nursing home. You can stay in your home. And I'm just trying to think if there are any other options, but I will address something about staying in the home. In Baltimore, it seems to be that is really something new. And I think that it's probably quite expensive, but we have a community here that's been around for, oh gosh, over 100 years. And it's a retirement community for the elderly. And it's called Keswick. And they just launched something called Keswick at Home. And what they do is they have a care manager for people who want to stay in their homes. And they will do anything, including paying bills, taking people, you know, to their appointments, setting up a shopping service, anything like that. And what they do is they correspond typically with the parents, with the children of the elderly. So they're corresponding with the baby boomers. And because many of them live out of state and these people really don't have much family in town, or some of them might not have any close friends still living. So this care manager ends up setting everything up and allowing this person to stay in the home. Is that a trend?
Well, it's something that is actually quite common. There are people called geriatric care managers.
Right.
And then there are also other other organizations. I know that Sunrise Assisted Living also has a sort of a branch that does it, and there are others that do it as well. So it's something that I don't think it's as much of a trend as mm-hmm. it is something that more and more people are finding out about.
Okay.
And it's something that, you know, the hard thing is that it's just there are so many things that need to be done, and the family members, because they're not nearby, just before there was no other option. It's either you live in your home by yourself or you move into an assisted living or into a senior community of some sort. You know, mm-hmm. that was it.
Mm-hmm.
So now more and more people are beginning to talk about some of the other options. And this is a very good one.
Good. Okay. And then one other thing that I think we should mention is I know of some friends who had parents who had Alzheimer's, and I remember that when they were going through this, oh, my gosh, where am I going to put mom? Because, you know, they had young kids, and they couldn't have her in the home anymore because she was, like, undressing in front of the boys or, you know, just really unusual behavior. And they actually found homes specific for Alzheimer's patients. So I know that's true of Alzheimer's, you know, that there are homes that take only Alzheimer's patients, but is it true of any other disease or anything else like that, or is everything else pretty much you would just go into a retirement community or nursing home?
You mentioned Alzheimer's, and these, I'm not familiar with ones that only take Alzheimer's, but they take dementia patients, of which Alzheimer's
is
one of many different types of dementia. So, you know, it's if your loved one has dementia but it's not Alzheimer's, they will still take them because it's any memory impairment. It's their memory impairment unit or communities.
Okay, I see. Right.
Specific to that. And you're talking about things like having cancer or something like that. Is that?
Well, actually, yeah. And I guess there is like hospice, you know, hospice centers for the end of cancer. So that would be another another place, sure.
Yes, and really it depends on the level, because if someone has another disease that just needs monitoring, if they have diabetes, for example,
mm-hmm.
they can still live either at home with a nurse's aide, perhaps coming in if they need to do shots or take blood or whatever. They can live in an assisted living so long as they have the level of care that does that. Or sometimes if they don't have that level of care, then you can bring in the services of a nurse's aide from the outside. So really, in most cases, if they're living fine with whatever the disease is, then it's just a matter of accommodating that. It's toward the end that, as you said, then you look at the hospice services, and it can either be in the home or it can be wherever they need to be.
Mm-hmm. So that's we have a lot of research to do, and isn't it great when, I mean, every now and then you hear these couples who just decide, you know what, we really need to start thinking about what retirement community we want to go to, and they start looking at places and really planning, and boy, is that nice when they take, you know, the bull by the horns and really start doing their own research. Is there anything else that we need to research? I mean, we talked about all the different types of community and kind of having like some type of elder care organizer and all making sure we have all of our information in place. Is there anything else, or should we move on to another topic?
Well, just thinking in terms of in that kind of a situation, we're talking about moving and where to live and that sort of research, but also just in some of the day-to-day problems that your loved one that you're addressing with your loved one, like not driving,
mm-hmm.
for example. You know, the kinds of things where they don't have to move. It's not, you know, they shouldn't be driving, therefore they have to move into an assisted living. It's just that they shouldn't be driving.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're talking about research, a lot of times we don't really think in terms of the middle ground. They shouldn't be driving, fine, so you take away the car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that may or may not be the right thing to do, or you disable the car. Well, that may or may not be the right thing to do. So really thinking in terms of you're concerned, and they haven't hurt anyone yet, but you're really concerned, and you don't want to wait until they do hurt someone. But before deciding what to do, think in terms of what is the problem, and really research the problem. It could be that they need new glasses, and they just refuse to go, or just never thought of going in to get the glasses checked. It's a frugal generation, so they just don't want to, you know, go in for new glasses. But maybe that's all it is, or maybe they just shouldn't be driving at night, but they can still drive during the day. I mean, I don't know if those are the answers or not, but at least research it, because many times it becomes all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be shades of gray in there.
Okay.
And then also research and look at ways of accommodating. Maybe they really do have to stop. And you talk with them and they refuse to stop. So you take away the keys and they get more keys made, or you disable the car so they call AAA. But think in terms of what else is it that they need to do. What is it that the car represents? Is it just independence, or is it also for food shopping and visiting friends and going to the senior center and running errands? So if you simply take away the car, whether you disable it or by taking it away completely, it's really important before you do that is to research alternate methods of transportation so that they can still have that kind of independence and they can still get out and get around, because you don't want them to suddenly stop living, you know, and just sit at home because they have no way of getting out. That wasn't your intention. So look into bus schedules and car services and see if maybe another senior in the neighborhood or a family member can carpool or whatever. So thinking in terms of research in those terms as well.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's another issue that we've already dealt with, too, with my mother-in-law. She had macular degeneration,
mm-hmm.
and she really had to stop driving. And it was just so sad because she was very independent and loved to just, you know, get out and run around with her friends and things like that. So that is another biggie.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So let's move on and consider how do we anticipate these problems before they happen? Have we talked about that at all?
I think so. I think it's really just looking at them and thinking in terms of the future and asking your parents
mm-hmm.
or loved ones, what do you want for the next 5 or 10 years. You know, what are some of the things that you're dealing with? What do you want to have happen? And also ask them, what do you want for those years? Not just problems that you anticipate, because you're not looking for problems, but just what do you want your life to be like? What is it that you want for the third half of your life? And let them really think in terms of let the mind go and really think in terms of what do they want, and does the lifestyle they have now really afford that, or are there changes that could be made right now that would make it easier for them to do that in the future, or better for them to accomplish some of those. They want to go back to school. Great. Well, maybe then they might want to move to a community that's near a college, and there are a lot, you know, you talked about trends earlier, there are a lot of trends toward senior communities that are unique to particular interests, like a community that's attached to a college so that the people can attend school and be just right on campus. So thinking in terms of what are some of the other options and just talking with them about it. But again, these things require that you start early. Because once there's a crisis, then you don't necessarily have the option for them to move to the place they want to move to, or just because they wanted to go to college now, it's too late. So it's really a matter of starting early on and helping them to do it. And as you said, there's also the whole idea that just, you know, you don't choose it today and move tomorrow. You have to clean out the house.
Yeah, and also, I know when we were going around looking at retirement communities, oh, my gracious, I mean, you can get on a list that's 3 years long.
Yeah.
And what good is that if you need it immediately? Because especially if you're up against someone who has early stages of Alzheimer's, well, they could probably get in today. But in 3 years, I don't think they're going to be able to pass the test to get in.
Oh, absolutely.
So planning ahead is huge.
Oh, absolutely. And,
yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, that, and we were lucky with my mother that, there happened to be just the right place available immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But, it, you know, that's not always the case, and you're right, it could be 3 years, and it's truly the luck of the draw.
Right. Now, we talked a little bit about, like, the living will and the healthcare proxy and, you know, getting things in writing. Is that the kind of thing that you can do on, they can do on their own? Like, you know, if we were to go and download some of this information that you shared is on your site and is also on caringinfo.org, do you have to have a lawyer? Like, what do you have to have a lawyer for or another person to get all of this information in writing?
Well, you have to have a lawyer for a will and a power of attorney.
Okay.
And there are people, I'm sure, who say, well, you know, you can buy a will packet in the store. No, you can. That's not really what you want to do. So for a will and a power of attorney, you need a lawyer. And you should get a lawyer who specializes in elder law and estate planning.
Okay.
As part of that, All that I know of, and if they don't ask them to please also do the living will and a healthcare proxy that's appropriate. So you want to have the power of attorney for financial issues,
mm-hmm.
and the power of attorney for healthcare issues. So that's how you determine the two. The living will and the healthcare proxy are for healthcare, and the power of attorney is for financial. You know, while you're there, they have the forms, and they almost all of them do, and most at least should do it as part of the package. And then, obviously, a long-term care insurance person, if you're going to do that, you need a specialist, somebody who specializes in long-term care insurance,
mm-hmm.
and the medical tests, getting any of those done.
Okay, one thing we haven't talked much about, and it's a really big part of it, is the finances. And, you know, what if our parents don't have a financial advisor that they've been working with, but they have, you know, money invested and saved, and they're looking at moving into a retirement community or taking the next step? I mean, there is a lot to consider there. And what do you recommend? Do you recommend that families work it out on their own? You know, leave it to the parents, or, you know, when do the kids get involved in the finances? Because I know sometimes you're just thrown into it by crisis. But again, that's a conversation we would have. You know,
absolutely.
Do we need to start writing checks for you? Are you comfortable? You know, those types of things. Like, I know my dad has just said he can't stand his handwriting anymore, and he's like, honey, I'd have to print all my checks. Do you mind coming over and writing them for me every now and then? Well, that's not a big deal, but, you know, he spoke up. I had no idea he wasn't comfortable with his handwriting and that he felt funny about that. So
absolutely. These are conversations that must be had, and to sit down and to talk with your loved ones about, you know, what, how are you, where are you with the finances? How are you with getting all the checks written and talking with them about getting your name on the checking account, whether you're writing the checks or not? And thinking in terms of these being precautions, not as for you to come in and take over. That, oh goody, now I have my name on your account. You know,
sure.
See you later. But these are just precautions for the future. So you go on vacation and you say, I want to stay an extra week. Here's somebody who can still, you know, write your checks. And really those are the kinds of things that you're talking about. But absolutely the conversations need to be had. And they need to be had about the living will and the healthcare proxy too. Because just because you've put my name on that says you're going to make the decisions, you know, whether or not to do life-saving, you know, in the middle of the operation, they come to me and say, which way do you want to go here? If I'm going to make those decisions, I want to make sure that we've had a conversation first about what you really do want.
Right.
It's just something that you sign and put in your safe deposit box, because that's the worst place for it, because in an emergency, if you can't get it, then it's just as bad as not having it. The other thing is that it's a conversation that you need to have and make sure that other siblings have it too. I may give it to, I have two sisters, and my mother and I have the living will and the health care proxy because I live closest. Mm-hmm. But if I'm the one who's going to have to make those decisions, I want to make sure that my sisters know that those were my mother's wishes, so that in the worst possible emotional state, I'm not suddenly the angel of death,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I know my loved one, my mother in this case, and other people's loved ones, that can't possibly want that for their children to be angry about this, you know, forever. But these are conversations that need to be had early on as to what it is, you know, what you want and how you want it taken care of.
Well, you mentioned your sisters. So I have to say we were pretty darn fortunate when we were going through the crisis with my mom, because there are five of us. But, what you know, how do you deal with siblings? Because I would think that could be an issue.
It can be. It can be one of the most difficult issues. I'm very fortunate that I'm very close to my siblings, too. And my sisters have been great, and we work terrifically well together. But it can be so difficult. It is one of those, it can be everything from mom loved you more than she loved me. So
mm-hmm.
now, you know, we're at the end, we're fighting over who's the better child. It's also, can be very difficult. What often happens, what I see a lot in my practice as a generational coach, is you've got the person doing all the work, usually the daughter who lives nearby and
mm-hmm.
who's doing all the work, and then you've got the other sibling, usually the son, who lives, you know, 3,000 miles away, and the daughter's doing all the work, and the son calls once a month and says, "Oh, Mom, I'm sure you don't have to move. I'm sure you don't have to do that." And then suddenly the person who's doing all the work is saying, "Wait a minute. You know, I finally got her to agree because I can't continue to do this." And now you've got the sibling that's sabotaging you because they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're doing it just because they don't know what's going on. A lot of times there's just not the communication between the siblings, where you don't say to the brother or the sibling, "I'm dying here.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'm drowning, and I need some help." And oftentimes, by the time we do ask for it, we're angry and we're resentful. So it's really important to talk with your siblings as early on as possible, and discuss way before there's a need. Discuss how you're going to work together, and how you're going to divide up the responsibilities. And maybe if a sibling can't help with the day to day, maybe they can make some of the phone calls, you know, if something has to be done, or maybe they can provide some financial support. They can't be there to take mom to all the appointments, but they can pay into for the use of a geriatric care manager. They can help pay for that, or a car service or something like that. So, but again, all of these things is to really start early on in talking to each other. And most importantly, whatever you do decide, make sure to agree that the solutions are for now, and that we need to be revisited, at least need to be revisited, and probably change as the situation changes. So there's not that nobody can say, "Well, you told me this is all I was going to have to pay, and I'm doing like, "Whoa, yeah, but that was when that was all we needed."
Right.
Now we need something different. So really make sure that that's agreed upon, and set it up in advance. Every 3 months we're going to revisit it, and if we need it more often, then we're going to move it to every month, or we're going to move it to every week. But really, the more you can communicate, the better off you're going to ultimately be.
Yeah, so it just seems like communication is key and organization is key. And you mentioned the out-of-town siblings. And I think a lot of times, because they don't there and they're not there, they don't see the day in and day out, they're also in denial. They have no clue, like, maybe how, you know, much worse the situation has gotten, or, you know, they're just handling from afar and they really can upset the apple cart. Because it's, you know, you're in there day in and day out getting all this work done, and then they're not aware and they're kind of clueless, and they're like, "Oh gosh, you don't have to do that. Why do you have to do that?" kind of thing. And that's boy, that's really detrimental, you know.
And it's not only detrimental to the relationship, but also detrimental to the long-term care of your loved one. And
sure.
It's especially true when it comes to dementia, because people with dementia, they remember things. Their facts and figures mm-hmm. are remembered differently from emotional experiences and from the social experiences. So someone with dementia often has very good social skills and can talk on the phone and sound perfectly okay, or go into the doctor's office and sound perfectly okay, chit-chatting with the doctor, and the doctor looks at you like you're crazy, right? Or your sibling calls and says, "Mom's fine." And you're going, "No, she's not." And just because they can carry on a social conversation does not mean they can take care of themselves.
Okay.
And so that's why it's also important to compare notes and to, you know, make sure they understand, because that's especially in the early stages of dementia, and that's one of the things that my sisters and I did in the beginning, is that one thing that I might find quirky, if my sisters don't know about it, then they don't take the one thing that they find quirky. You know, it's an accumulation.
Right, to put it all together, sure.
Exactly.
Sure. Okay, well, let's see. We've covered quite a bit. We have about 5 more minutes. Let's see. How can you, like, when you're going through this, and I think especially the biggest thing is, where will I live? How do you convince them of what you think is their best option?
Well, it's a tough one, and the answer is that just because we think something is right does not mean that they will automatically agree, and
mm-hmm.
the fact is that just because we think something is right, you cannot make them want to do something. You can't make anyone want to do something. You can't make your spouse do it, you can't make your kids do it, and you certainly can't make your parents want to do something if they don't want to do it.
Hmm.
So rather than trying to convince them of what you think is in their best interest, what you need to do is help them convince themselves of what is in their best interest. Ideally, the same thing as what you think it is, but not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And you help them come to the conclusion by asking them questions. The questions like, what do you want, and then how will you help them to achieve what they want? Let me give you an example that's a little bit off, but it happened yesterday, and so it's right on top of my mind. I was talking with a woman who had agreed to write an article for my newsletter, and she had agreed to do it, and then she wanted to back out. And so rather than trying to convince her that, oh, yes, she really should do it, mm-hmm. I asked her why she had agreed to write the article in the first place. And as she was talking, she said, "Oh, yeah, now I remember. I really do want to do it. Yeah, okay, this is something I really do want to do."
Hmm.
And it's really the same thing with your parents, is rather than to say, "Oh, but it's good for this reason and this reason and this reason," and have them, you know, back further and further and further away, say, "What is in it for you? Why is this in your best interest?"
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, they may come up with a better idea or plan, so trying to convince them isn't always the best thing to do. But one way to do that is to help them to think about what do they want for the future. And on my website, there's a form on the newsletter page. There's a button that you can download a form called "What I Want for the Third Half of My Life."
Hmm.
And it comes with instructions. So I really recommend that if people give it a try. It's called "What I Want for the Third Half of My Life." It's on the seminar page. The idea of it is for people to figure out, what do I want for the third half of my life? It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
What do I want to, I want to get my degree, my college degree. I want to travel the world. I want to sleep all day and watch television all night. Whatever, you know, it's not just one or two things, but it's just, you know, just going wild with yourself. What do you want to do with the third half of your life?
Sure. It's very similar to what a lot of us baby boomers are doing with what do
exactly.
we want to do with, like, the second half of our
exactly.
life.
Exactly.
And you know, and I think I read a book recently, Coming of Age All Over Again, and we're using that book in our book club right now. And it is a book that really forces you to consider where you've been and where you're going. And, oh, it was so refreshing. And, I mean, a lot of the information isn't particularly new. It's a lot of stuff maybe you've thought about, but it's very organized, and there are lots of questions. And if you use it as a workbook, you can really make changes in your life. So that's basically what we're asking our parents to do at this stage, too.
Exactly, and it's really to think in terms of, okay, if you want to get your degree, what then are the next steps to take in order to make that happen? And if living where you are or you're so busy taking care of the house that you can't study or whatever the issues are, then it's a time, okay, well, then let's take a look at making some changes. And the exciting thing about it is that they're then seeing that those changes are going to help them for their future.
Okay, gotcha. Anything else you want to add to the call that we haven't covered?
Only that I think that it's just, I say this all the time and I feel so passionately about it, and that is to start early.
Mm-hmm.
Start talking not about the big issues, but talking about the little stuff, going through the attic and looking at all of the things, and just starting the conversations and starting the process.
Right.
And looking for opportunities. The opportunities come while you're washing the dishes or while you're having a cup of coffee, and those are the ones that you want far more than sitting down to have the conversation.
Right, exactly.
Fraught with danger.
Sure. Well, you know, one thing that I just want to throw in here is we had a minister at our church several years ago who held a class for the elderly people in the congregation to plan their funerals, which I thought was so interesting. And it was a really healthy class where he talked to them about, you know, this is going to happen, and why not give a gift to your family by having everything picked out. You can pick out, like, the hymns you want and the Bible verses, and it was just very healthy. And then we'll keep the folder at the church, and you can update it, you can change it, you know, that type of thing. And I have to say, when my mom was sick and we knew, you know, when she started hospice care, my dad and one of my sisters and I went to the funeral home, and we did everything we needed to do at the funeral home at that time. And then when mom died, we basically had to plan her funeral and get the flowers, of course, notify people. But it made it so much easier on us not to have to go to that funeral home in that state of just such, oh, God. I don't know where we got the idea, but I was really grateful. And actually, it's something that I would love to do, you know, for my dad in preparation. And, you know, and this whole teleseminar is making me think I've got a lot of work to do here with my dad and my father-in-law, because they're pretty well right now. So this is when we should be having these conversations.
Exactly. This is the time.
Yeah, it really is. It's
so much easier to have a conversation about death and dying when you're healthy.
Yes.
Than it is when you're feeling sick. And the other exercise is that's a brilliant one. I love your minister because that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is to think about writing your own obituary.
Right.
Think in terms of what would you want people to say about you. Look at your life and what will you have wanted to accomplish. And think in terms of, for your aging loved one, not, you know, hey, mom, you know, you've got a year. I want you to write your – but really to think in terms of using that – what do you want for the third half of your life? You know,
mm-hmm.
what do you want it to have said? You know, what regrets do you want to make sure aren't in there? But what a great idea. My father did the same. He always said what he wanted for his when he died, and it's exactly what we did, and it was great because it was joyous. He wanted a party, and everybody knew that that's what he wanted, and so we had a great time, and it celebrated his life.
Right, and I think that the boomers are more into that, and I mean, for boomer funerals and also for our parents' funerals, is looking at death, you know, as the funerals, as a way to celebrate the life. I'm really happy that that is something new that I'm seeing more and more of.
And so are you saying that baby boomers just want, looking for an excuse to have a party?
Imagine that, right?
Imagine that.
Right. But, okay, Barbara, before we get off, are there any books or websites, of course your website, and, you know, any other resources that you have used that you could recommend? I know myself, I recently read The 36-Hour Day, which is about living with Alzheimer's or living with loved ones with Alzheimer's. And then I also read the Everything Alzheimer's book, both of which were really helpful. And so anyway, other than Alzheimer's, is there anything else that you would recommend?
Well, there are two.
Okay.
One is that I do want to mention for practical stuff, and I feel very strongly about it because it's gotten a lot of really rave reviews that I'm very proud of, is that on my website I have a CD called Is Simple Forgetfulness the Real Thing? And it talks about very practical things from a parent from a family member's standpoint, how to communicate effectively, how to determine if it is just forgetfulness or if it is dementia, how to keep them independent longer. So I really do recommend that. They can get that through my website.
Okay.
The other, there's a book called The Parent Care Conversation.
Ooh, I love that title.
Yeah. And it's 6 strategies for dealing with emotional and financial challenges of aging parents.
Oh, wow. Okay, and tell me that again,
Parent Care Conversation.
Conversation.
By Dan Taylor.
Okay, that sounds wonderful.
And his website is www.parentcaresolution.com.
Parent Care Solution?
Yeah, right.
An OS on the end.
Correct.
Solution.com. Okay,
and
great.
That's actually going to be, I'm going to mention that in my newsletter and my June newsletter also, so they can sign up for that and hear about it. But it's really an excellent book, The Parent Care Conversation by Dan Taylor.
Okay, and then just one last thing is to remind everybody of your website, which is agewiseliving.com. And also, I'd just like to say that Barbara is a generational coach. She lives in New York. However, you don't have to live in New York to use her services. You can, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your coaching is done by phone with people all around the country.
All of it is.
Yes.
All of the coaching is by phone, so I work with people around the world even.
Okay, right. All right, great. So I just want to remind everyone of that. If you need a generational coach, you know, I hope that you would be in touch with Barbara. And also, please use her site. She has a lot of tools and resources on there that can be helpful to you and your loved ones. And then also she has a great newsletter which you should sign up for. So Barbara, unless there's anything else, I'd just like to invite everyone to visit BoomerWomenSpeak.com and NABBW.com. And if you're listening and you are not a member of the association, you're more than welcome to join. We'd love to have you. And if you email us and mention this teleconference, we will send you a discounted link to join for $60 instead of the $75. So I think that's it for today. And thanks, everyone, for being on the call. We hope we've helped you cover a lot of information about caring for your loved ones, and especially by choice and not by crisis. So thanks again, and have a great day.
Thank you.